This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
Gravity had a good run, but it's time to feel the weightlessness of the Brooks Glycerin 21. These running shoes feature nitrogen-infused DNA Loft V3 cushioning. Brooks has even magnified the plushness to elevate the softness to new levels. And if you want extra support, find these same features in the Brooks Glycerin GTS 21. Learn more and shop now at brooksrunning.com. That's brooksrunning.com.
This is iFanboy Special Edition Batman and Harley Quinn. Welcome to iFanboy Special Edition Batman and Harley Quinn. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I have reconvened the iFanboy Animation Brain Trust, Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Ryan Haupt.
I answered the call.
And we are talking about the 29th DC Universe animated original film, Batman and Harley Quinn. And Paul, it's also Harley Quinn's anniversary this week.
Yeah, it's, I think, Monday was her 25th birthday as a person, character, I don't know.
So yeah. By waiting and being a little late on this, we actually made it more timely.
All part of the plan.
So we're talking about the latest film. There'll be spoilers if you haven't seen it. Pause it, come back. But this is the latest in the DC Universe animated original line, which is known by several names, but it's the one that is overseen by Bruce Timm, though not as directly anymore. Although this is his film. He's come back. He came back for Gods and Monsters about six films ago. And he's back for Batman Harley Quinn. This was based on his story. This was co-written by him. And he features, he plays Booster Gold in it as well.
That's true.
So this is a road movie, kind of. It is also a return, sort of, to the Batman Animated Series world. It features the character designs, or at least sort of character designs from the second half of the series. It features
new adventures, but yeah. With the backgrounds and some of the vehicles from the original Batman the Animated Series.
And the voice work of Kevin Conroy and Lauren Lester as Batman and Dick Grayson, although it features a new Harleen Quinzel and Melissa Rauch from The Big Bang Theory.
The Batman design did look tweaked, even from the new adventures.
Well, it's been a long time.
It's like...
people will comment if
it's
we don't
It's somewhere in between New Adventures and Justice League. It's not the Justice League that J.R.E.
That's a good description.
He's very slim. He's not as barrel-chested.
True. Svelte.
Yeah.
Svelte bat. It's easier to fly when you're svelte, Paul.
So this story, briefly, is that Poison Ivy and the Floronic Man are teaming up to do what they do, which is try to get rid of all the people and return the world to plants. And, of course...
reverse Fern Gully or something.
And Batman and Nightwing grab Harley Quinn to help, because Harley Quinn is besties with Poison Ivy, to help stop them. And that's basically the plot of the film.
And this is her post-Joker. She's been released on parole, but she hasn't been keeping up with her parole board. And she's working at very interesting themed restaurant.
Super Babes.
Super Babes Diner.
Super Babes.
Sort of a Hooters in the DC universe, which would totally happen.
Sure. I love the idea that Nightwing doesn't know about it right. until he stumbles upon it.
What is this?
I feel like Nightwing would be like a backer.
Yeah, he would have definitely started it. I did enjoy sort of the meta joke of the hot granny goodness waitress.
I was like, is that? Oh, okay, yeah.
That was funny to me on several levels. So Nightwing finds her at the restaurant. They have a little sexual interlude, and then they go on the road to Batman to find Poison Ivy and the Floronic Man.
I think you just yada, yada, yada'd something.
Well, I'm just giving the overview. We'll get to that in a second. What I found, I was thinking about a lot after watching this film, because my reaction is very complicated.
Yes.
How long have you been thinking, Connor?
I would say I've been thinking about it for the two
When did you watch it?
The 2 hours since I finished watching the movie.
Okay.
I think Bruce Timm's bored. He's been doing these cartoons for 25 years, and I would not begrudge him for being bored about any of this. And so he left the line, and then he came back and he did Gods and Monsters, which was totally a different kind of story. It was terrific.
Yeah.
And then this is more of a Batman comedy. As we said, the designs are sort of an amalgam of the two versions of the Batman the Animated Series, but then there's also a heavy dose of Batman 66 in here.
Yep.
It's sort of a straight-up comedy, but then there are parts that are drama. I thought the tone was a little hard to wrap my head around.
I think it's mostly comedy. Yeah. I don't know.
It's way more comedy than I was anticipating.
Yes, that's. I think what threw me off at the first was that, this is like a straight-up comedy.
Batman's drinking a glass of milk.
On the thing about him being bored, about Bruce Timm being bored, I don't know if...
I don't know if that's true. I just, my feeling I get after watching.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that or it's like, this is the thing he's long wanted to do. Like, maybe now that he's done a lot of serious stuff, and like, this is a total shift from, what's it called? Gods and Monsters?
Gods and Monsters, yeah.
The previous one, the previous one he did?
Yep.
That's very dark, very serious, very inventive. Like we've seen a bunch of what if Batman was evil, or what if, you know, Superman was evil or fascist or whatever. We've seen a billion of those, but like that was a very creative take on that.
Right.
It was really interesting. And this just felt sort of like, okay, now we don't have to worry about the censors on Fox or WB. We can kind of do some really blue jokes. It felt, I don't know, just the amount of comedy and the types of jokes that were in it, I got the sense that it was like Bruce Timm, unshackled,
yes,
Bruce Timm doing what he wants to do and the kinds of jokes that he was never allowed to tell.
And the sexier.
And the sexier, too, yeah.
I mean, Bruce Timm's always been about sexy drawings of superheroes. You know, he has whole books, you know, pinup art, and
right.
His characters are even the designs for these characters, you know, very hourglassy women, and, you know, fits into that Darwin Cook style of throwback sexiness. And this is, I did feel that too, Paul, that this is sort of unshackled Bruce Timm. Like, they never let us do a straight-up comedy episode. Let's do a comedy one, and let's make it sexier, and let's do all the things we couldn't do before because we're 29 into this, and, you know, mm-hmm. Who's going to stop me?
There was a criticism going around online before I'd seen this about Harley Quinn. When she there's a moment where she goes to her closet, and she's picking out an outfit,
yep.
And she bends over, uh-huh. And Dick Grayson is tied to this bed watching this, and so he has this particular angle, and the way they draw Harley Quinn's butt, like they were like, you can the commenter was saying, you can tell that it was just a bunch of guys in a room who did this, because like anatomically, like she has two butt cracks and it doesn't make sense.
Okay.
And so it was interesting. That was the main commentary that I saw coming out of this before I'd watched it myself.
Oh really? I saw the only thing, commentary I saw was about the fart joke. Which people
and
really
that I saw that more recently.
That's funny because I thought that the shot of her bending over was so quick I didn't even absorb any details from it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have noticed it either. But it was something. There was a still of it, and it's like the way her panties work over, like she kind of has two butts.
Maybe that's why Lightwing was so into it.
Maybe. Maybe
that's what, you know, Starfire has too, and he was just reminiscing.
It's with his with
she's
his.
An alien, she has two butts, so maybe.
I loved his Doug Ross ER cut.
Yeah, the Caesar hair.
The very extreme Caesar haircut for 2017.
Ryan, what'd you think tonally of the film?
I agree with you. It was a little, you know, more comedy than I was expecting, and so then when you cut back to like a pretty grim and somber death scene, I was like, oh, that's a weird direction to take things, and then it just kind of ends. You're like, guess that was the movie. All right.
That was a Looney Tunes ending.
It was a very Looney Tunes ending.
Did you guys say to the end of the credits there was like a
yes.
5-minute sequence at the end?
Yeah, that sequence went on way longer than I anticipated. I mean, and I it was got the very... joke very quickly, and then I was like, okay, this is still going with this joke.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's like it was very involved. That seemed like a very complex animation sequence with the like American Ninja Warrior set. Yeah. Like that probably
your commentary on our mental health care system.
The South Korean animation team that was working on this spent a lot of time on that, and it's something that probably not a lot of people saw because they probably turned it off.
I only did it because so they've been doing these films that take place in a shared universe, and those usually have a post-credit sequence.
That's why I watched
point ahead. But this was a standalone, and I thought, well, I'll just fast forward to the end, and if it's there, if there's something there, I'll see it. But I didn't expect to run into like a full-on sequence, which is I think the most we've seen in a post. I thought it was funny. It was, you know, the whole running plot from this is that she's reformed, you know, Harley Quinn. She's trying really hard to be reformed, but she can't get a job because she's an ex-con. She's an ex-Arkham Asylum inmate. She's an ex-supervillain, so she's waitressing, but... So now she's gotten a TV job as sort of a Dr. Phil-esque TV psychiatrist who apparently puts her patients through elaborate...
By the end credits. Until that point, she hasn't... Like, throughout the movie, she doesn't have that job.
No, right. So then there's reveal at the end that she's her next thing is she's a TV personality, puts her patients through these American Ninja Warrior-esque obstacle courses to help them. But you're right. It's sort of a commentary on the sort of pop psychology of all these things.
Like if you get through the obstacle course, you win a year's free therapy from an actual therapist.
Also, rewinding a bit, Connor.
Yep.
I don't know when these shows are going to drop in the sequence, but there seems to be a theme with opening sequences in superhero comedy things now, where you have like the silhouettes of people chasing each other around. Because that's almost exactly the same style and feel as the opening credits for The Tick that we just covered.
So I guess it should have been obvious this was more of a comedy because the opening credits were very...
Very silly.
Silly, pop arty, Saul Bassey, a lot of big horns.
I thought of Saul Bassey, like especially with the lettering and stuff, which carries into the end credits as well.
The music for the menu screen is the same music. So I guess in retrospect, all the clues were there that this wasn't going to be your normal Batman. You know, this wasn't the mostly you get the Batman theme music that sounds like a variation on the animation or the animated series, but this was big and brassy and silly, so we should have known, I guess, from the beginning of the tone this was going to work. So do you think it worked?
Ryan?
Paul punts.
I enjoyed this.
To Ryan.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it as well. I didn't love it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's a mixed bag. There's some real groaners in there, and not in a like fun way. There's like actual groaning.
Maybe this speaks to where I'm at in the world with our current situation and politics, but kind of agree with Floronic Man and Ivy on this one. Let's burn it to the ground.
Yeah.
So I almost didn't want them to be stopped. I was kind of happy with their plan to just wipe the slate clean and start anew.
Well, that's always the Ra's al Ghul thing is... It's more compelling if there's a little bit of truth in it.
Yes.
You know, we are sort of destroying the planet, so I guess they're not wrong.
That's always more compelling. And it's interesting that there would be, like, in a comedy like this, like, there's an actual, like, oh, they have a point there, yeah. there's a lot of stuff in here that are groaners, as I said, but there's a lot of stuff that I really like. I love the Swamp Thing gag. Especially if you're a longtime fan of Swamp Thing and know sort of how he works and where he's gone, I guess since like the Alan Moore stuff, where he just sort of shows up and he's like, I don't like what you're doing, but who am I to judge? And then sinks back into the water and they're like, what? And like, and just seeing like Harley obviously is going to have like a broad reaction to it, but Lauren Lester is Dick Grayson is like, oh, come on. Like,
Well, they were so excited when he showed up.
He's like, yes!
It was a great gag because they had set him up as the Deus Ex Machina character, right? So we had a tease of him in the beginning. They stole his research, Dr. Alec Holland's research, and there's a little a very heavy-handed origin of Swamp Thing related by Batman.
It was like, well, where's this camera that's observing?
I was wondering about the camera that was filming Alec Holland on fire.
But theoretically, he could have security footage outside of his laboratory, and even though it's like in the middle of nowhere. I know, but he could have a Nest cam or something.
I did like that the security guard or cop or whoever did confuse Floronic Man and Swamp Thing, because I feel like that's every nerd has to, at one point in our nerd career, make a very pedantic correction along that line.
So
he's a very D-list kind of villain, Floronic Man, and they chose his most D-list name. Like he goes by Floria, the Cedar, like all
Floria
different.
Floria is the dimension he's from, which Floria I misread as Florida the first time I saw it. I was like, well, that makes sense to have a.
And reading his Wikipedia article, just to be clear, I didn't know that coming in. I had to read the Wikipedia article to catch up on Floronic Man because I haven't read all of his appearances in Flash and the Atom, but.
Come on, Tom.
They apparently used like a mishmash of all three of his various origins, because they reference stuff that happened in the Alan Moore Swamp Thing, I believe. They mention him being a dryad from another dimension, but he also is named Jason Woodrow.
Yeah, which, it's weird.
So that's
not a name I would anticipate coming from.
So just like, let's use everything.
So they set it up that Poison Ivy and Floronic Man had to go to Swamp Thing's actual swamp in Louisiana to make their plan work. So now you see where this is going, right? You see they're going to run into Swamp Thing. He's going to save the day. But Swamp Thing appears in his giant three-story-high Swamp Thing version, which I laughed also at. And then, as Paul said, he just went, yeah, never mind, and he left. So I did like that swerve on it, because they'd been teasing him throughout the entire episode or movie that he was going to appear.
John DiMaggio as the voice of God for Swamp Thing. It's fun.
I mean, I agree with Paul. I mean, I agree with both of you. There were sequences I really liked, even goofier ones. I did like the whole sequence at the Super
Bloodhaven Bar.
At the bar with all the, not the psychics, but like the hoods, the hired goons.
Yep. All the, yeah, like thugs, the goons.
That was
very 60s Adam West era.
Even without the punching sound effects at the end, I thought the whole thing was great. I like these voice casts. I love Lauren Lester's Nightwing. I watched the featurette on him, which I assume you guys didn't watch because you probably watched it digitally.
I rented it digitally.
Same.
There's a nice feature,
which I would say is the way to go.
His return to the character was fun. I think he's great. He's a great Dick Grayson.
Yeah, he's good. Sounds, pretty much the same. It's not a situation like what's the guy who plays Megatron? Like his voice is gone over the years.
Or James Earl Jones' Darth Vader.
He's still got it.
I just watched Rogue One again. He sounds very old. He sounds very old.
Okay.
I love him. He sounds old though.
He just got out of the Bacta tank though, or whatever that is. So
he hasn't cleared his throat.
Yeah, got some Bacta phlegm.
The fight sequences were great. Yeah, as they always are.
I thought the action sequences were pretty good.
It's a high quality one. I think sometimes sometimes they don't always come off that way, but I think this one was.
I increasingly find myself drifting during the action sequences. I'm finding them all a little samey at this point, and I know that that's a feature of these films, is you have to have like a big action set piece or several big action set pieces, but they're doing less and less for me as we keep getting a couple of these movies every year.
That makes total sense.
I think the big surprise for me was Min and Max, the two Two-Face henchmen, singing "Don't Pull Your Love," like because that keeps going like
the whole time.
Going in on this.
They sang the whole song. Good voices. I have a hard time even encapsulating like my thoughts in one line on it.
It's like I would call it an interesting curiosity. Like it's a very strange product.
Yeah,
I think it's. I think it's very much designed for people who watched and loved the original Batman the Animated Series and have kind of a fun sense of humor about it. I didn't think, like, I don't know, maybe half the jokes were funny, but
yes.
I was tickled by enough of it that I would say it's worth renting and checking out.
I was thinking about it after, and it's not like the quote-unquote Timverse hasn't had seriously goofy elements, especially in the Justice League side of things. I mean, you had Batman having to sing on stage, you had people turning into pigs.
So, Wonder Woman turning into a pig.
Right, so that's not like...
Which, that episode also featured a long musical sequence of Batman singing. That's what I mean. And so that's one of my favorite sequences in that entire series.
Yeah.
So, in that sense, it doesn't feel completely out of place. It's just that the comedy's the dials turned a little bit more up. And I'm always happy with comedy in these things, so...
There was also an episode, I don't know where it fell, but there was an episode with Harley Quinn doing karaoke, and...
That was at the club right after the Two-Face henchman stopped singing. It was like she had to trade singing that song to the big...
Yeah, I mean, but there was like, that's a callback, apparently, to another Harley Quinn scene from one of the animated series. I don't know which one, but she apparently did that in something. Of course, it wasn't this actress, but... And I felt like I went into this thinking, like, hearing the criticism of her performance, Melissa Rauch, as Harley Quinn, and so I had sort of low expectations going in, and I think she does okay in some spots, but then in other spots it's like very much like this is an actress reading words. Mm-hmm. Like there are bits for her that are a little bit overwritten. Like she has this definite sort of affectation, like a lot
of it felt like sometimes she's trying stuff, too and, hard to hold on to the accent.
Right.
Maybe and the performance suffered so for
things
it.
Didn't feel as natural.
Yeah.
They doubled down on Brooklyn Jewish.
Right.
That they haven't before, which is fine because I guess that's her character. But it's like when Bendis would throw in Yiddish with every character he wrote.
This is very vaudeville.
Yeah.
In places where it doesn't feel natural. There are some spaces in here where it's like I could see that joke landing, but just they didn't get the timing right on something. So I mean, there are definitely things here that if you're a longtime fan of the DC animated universe, are worth checking out, like seeing all the different thugs. So like Captain Clown, and some of the other henchmen are recognizable from the animated series. Flare, Mo, and Curl are the one who does the Batusi to Batman is kind of fun. Like just the animations of the dancing are kind of funny and like how bad they're. It's kind of like the. Like Charlie Brown Christmas special, like right. The weird, like they have one move that they keep doing over and over again.
Well, that's the thing is if you got one dance move down, you just drive that into the ground.
Drive it into the ground.
That is how I operate in life.
Same sex henchmen dancing together. It was a very nice sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. It wasn't what I was expecting. So that's the only trouble I'm having over. I'm a fan of vaudeville-esque superhero stories. So
yeah, I like how broad it is. I don't necessarily like the fart joke.
No, it was terrible. But it
goes a bit like there's some jokes that like go a little bit like, okay, I get it. Like, I don't know, the Argus guy apparently having a bondage fetish and Batman knowing about that and using it as leverage. And like they keep like
weird.
Hammering on that punchline. Like, all right, I got it the first time.
Just I feel like they took a big swing here. And I respect that. I respect the swing.
I do, too. I respect it.
So something else I'm interested in, since you guys didn't watch the featurettes, I can tell you, is that they had one on Gotham by Gaslight, which is the next we're going to see.
Oh, cool.
And yay! I'm excited about that one.
It sounds like they may be introducing into this rotation Elseworlds.
Okay. Like this is their first.
Right. Because they say at some point this is our first Elseworlds film. And just the way they talked about it made it sound like there's going to be more of them.
Okay.
Which is exciting to me because I always loved the Elseworlds stories, and since this was the first Elseworlds story, it's the first Elseworlds animated one, so that makes sense.
Is it also the best Elseworlds story?
It's one of the best ones, although it's.
I'm just thinking,
short.
Like, are they? You know, is
Red Sun?
Their what? Right, that's the one that people keep asking about. Is Red Sun?
What I want.
So the original Gotham by Gaslight is actually really, really short. Gaslight, not
it is,
Gaslight.
Yeah.
And so you tend to get the collection that's got that one plus the sequel, which is done by a completely different art team. The original is drawn by Mike Mignola.
I have the original.
So this one, they said, is a combination of both plus a lot of new elements because they had to flesh the story out. It, you know, but the idea of Batman, basically Batman versus Jack the Ripper is a fun one. I'm looking forward to it. It looked super fun. And it's, you know, it's a totally different kind of thing. This is a totally different kind of Batman story.
I totally don't know the original.
Some kind of Batman we've never even
some
seen.
Some kind of Batman we've never even seen before on screen. And it looks like it's pretty bloody from what they showed. I'm looking forward to that. That one doesn't have a release date yet. Probably February for the next one. Is usually how it works.
That sounds right.
Oh, Connor, I did not end up going and seeing this movie in theaters. Didn't work out schedule-wise. Uh-huh. But thanks for the link.
No problem.
Oh, this was a Fathom Events, right.
I'd like to do one of those. It just didn't work.
So Gotham by Gaslight's the next one. That's an Elseworlds story. That'll be really fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Do they talk about the voice actors?
They might have. I watched it a week ago.
We're so old.
I know.
We're so old and not helpful to the audience.
I'm losing everything. I don't think they actually did talk about the voice actors. They spent a lot of time talking about the story because... it's Bruce Greenwood. Bruce Greenwood's Batman.
Why?
He's the best.
He's okay. Yeah, he's... I don't know. Yeah, he's good.
He was Batman under the Red Hood.
You could do something more interesting, though.
And he was Batman in Young Justice.
Yeah, I like... his
President
Batman.
President Kennedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's Admiral Pike.
Yeah.
It was Bruce Greenwood and Jennifer Carpenter as Selina Kyle. That's
like, I don't know who I'd want as steampunk Batman, but like...
It's not really steampunk Batman. It's Sherlock Holmes sorta. Batman. I mean, it's not like he's got...
Victorian
Batman.
If only there was a guy who played Batman that was also in a Victorian era movie.
What are you alluding to?
Which one are you going with?
Christian Bale. In,
yeah, okay. All right. That's the one I went to, but thank you.
sorry. Didn't mean to make it.
So after that, Suicide Squad held to pay.
Bill Nye is in the Limehouse Golem, which is, I think, direct to streaming and also in theaters. He could play Batman.
Bill Nye?
Yeah. It'd be weird.
I'll allow him to play anyone. Next year, assuming Gotham by Gaslight comes out. Why do I keep saying Gaslight? Gaslight comes out in the beginning of the year. Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay, which... not excited
sure.
about.
Sure.
Ryan is probably excited because he loved the last Suicide Squad.
He did love the last one. That was his favorite. That's his favorite of all of them.
And then Death of Superman, Reign of Superman, the double feature, which is going to be interesting as they start remaking themselves in true Hollywood fashion.
They're also coming out with the New Frontier in a Steelbook edition.
Yes.
It's like called the commemorative edition. I'm not a Steelbook person, but it's cool that they are giving that one another shot because it's one of the good ones.
Yeah, it is one. I recently rewatched it, and it still holds up.
I think they also put out Wonder Woman again, which I missed.
They did during the movie came out.
That's my favorite.
But, yeah, that's a really good one, too. All right, so that's Batman and Harley Quinn. You can go to ifanboy.com. There'll be a post there if you want to talk about it. Feel free. In the meantime, Ryan, tell us to people about your show.
I do a show called Science Sort Of. We drink beer and talk about science to each other as scientists and friends.
And Paul, you're still coming up with Fuzzy Typewriter shows?
Yeah, we're doing Fuzzy Typewriter. I think we're going to do an It episode soon. So excited about that.
It.
It Chapter 1. Spoiler. There's going to be another one.
You didn't even need that spoiler considering the box office it did. Even if they hadn't put it in the film itself. So that you can listen to those shows. You get the weekly iFanboy Pick of the Week show. We talk about the weekly books. Special edition shows up at Yin Yang. iFanboy Family is busy this final quarter. You can find all the shows at ifanboy.com and sciencesortof.com.
Yep.
And fuzzytypewriter.com.
Just follow me on Twitter.
There's also ryanhalp.com, which you can learn about my research that I do as a scientist.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Ryan. My grandma texted me a picture of a sloth, so at least he's on board. Connor.
Ryan, do you have any final points about the movie?
Let me quick addendum. There's so much I wanna do. I've got love enough for two. But I'll never use a girl if I don't have you.